This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
One briefcase, one moment could change everything. Yamava Resort and Casino at San Manuel is giving you a chance to own your destiny in 2026. Play throughout the month of January, and on January 28th, One Club Serrano member will win the case, and with it, a finale spot in any 2026 promotion, plus $400,000. Which destiny will you choose? It's all happening at Yamava Resort and Casino, celebrating its 40th anniversary. You in? Details at yamava.com. Must be 21 to enter. Please gamble responsibly.
Again, Bill Livingston has passed away. If you guys, I think Pat McMahon, I think Pat has sent out a McManaman. Good Lord, that's hard to say. He sent out a nice tweet about Bill, and we've seen several other people do this. I think Al Powell sent one out as well. So that is the latest there. Now, obviously, we talked a little bit about the Fiesta Bowl with the Jackson Dart stuff. Kind of have to talk about the pretty significant no call at the end there. Mm-hmm. Ole Miss in about the half field, right? About 50-yard line, throwing into the end zone for a Hail Mary.
They got to like the 35-yard line or so. It was weird because they got the ball back with like 18 seconds left, and then mm-hmm. they were able to have two completions and get down the field rather quickly.
It was actually like the end of the Baltimore-Pittsburgh game at the end of the regular season, except instead of a missed field goal, it was just a 50, and it wasn't a 50-50 ball, but it was a very close play at the back of the end zone. And here's the problem. I don't think there's any debate that Miami got away with a pretty aggressive defensive pass interference.
Yeah, no, you can't really debate that part of it. The debate is whether or not in that moment, in that spot, could they have called something.
Yeah. I really struggle with that because
I
do think, like, you never want the narrative on a game to be the game was decided by the refs. And if you called DPI in that scenario, even though the clock would have expired, Miami gets one more play and the ball at the 1 yard line. Mm-hmm. Not Miami. Ole Miss gets the ball at the 1 yard line and one last play, which if they almost punched it in from the 35-yard line, I'm going to assume they do pretty okay from the goal line. I don't think you can make the call.
It would have been an amazing final play, though. Like, that would have been a lot of fun to be able to see. You can, in that spot, make that play. No. And I thought Ole Miss's head coach afterwards, I thought he had the right tune of it all, because he didn't come anywhere close to blaming any part of the officials in that spot or saying he got robbed. He was like, no, we had to play better. We had to coach better. We had to do all these things. And if anything, pointed to the idea that, great, you have the ball back with 18 seconds. You put yourself in a pretty bad spot.
I mean, I think this is what you, and we're going to play Pete Golding here. Interim Ole Miss head coach, now the full-time Ole Miss head coach, talking about the no PI call.
Those situations are tough to call them. I mean, those situations, yeah, there was contact, but I mean, it happens a lot. You know, that's not why we lost the game, but, you know, we just had a lot of opportunities late, but I mean, I think it shows you the resiliency of the team. You know, I mean, they didn't care. Was it 18-15? They're going to go out there and give it all they got, and looks like you ran out of time, but we didn't execute well enough.
So I actually agree with you could have won that game three other times in pivotal moments, right? At the same point, that's not what I want that head coach saying after that, because that's not what he believed. That's not. What he believed is the outrage that he and Chambliss had on the field after that no call. They were hot about it, and they were,
I mean, like, Chambliss definitely was.
Like, here's the thing. You and I, media guys, I think we have to have the take of, you lost that game four different times. It wasn't about that final play, even though we both agree it was defensive pass interference.
I know.
You can't put it on there. But as a head coach, he clearly believed that they deserved the call there.
But he's also setting himself up in an odd way. I mean, if this is the time
to
do it.
You have to tell the truth. You got to blast him for the call.
If this is the time to do it, if there's ever a time to do it, this is the time to do it, right? When you're like, this is the most important game you're ever going to coach in, probably. Like, if you're going to do it, this is the time to do it. But also, like, we've watched so many of these games, it doesn't get called in that spot.
Not it does. It
very,
does.
Very, very rarely.
Okay, but it's it is you can't
you see
say
Hail
it,
Marys get actually called
but
for that.
But you say it, you can't say it doesn't. It
I can't
does
remember one.
Called.
I can't think of a time off the top of my head where it has.
Ironically, I can think more in the NFL cases.
If you got one for me in the college
not,
game,
not
I'd love to hear
game.
Off the top of your
not
head. That's what
game.
I'm thinking in my head. I'm like
but,
going through my,
but again,
my Rolodex of
how
it
many,
all.
Like,
I watched a million Hail Marys that just go, and you see DPI, you see everything, and it just goes.
Oh, see, but I think this is the kind of thing that might get called at in
now,
like,
maybe,
the regular
maybe the
season
spotlights this, and so now maybe at some point we go back to the drawing board of, well, if it's a penalty in the third quarter, why isn't it a penalty in this one spot?
No, that has always made sense to me. Like, people that act like situational calls, that's not a thing. Guys, it's human. It's like, it makes sense. Refs don't mind when you give somebody another half to make up for a miscue. If there's no football to be played afterwards, they don't want to be the story.
So they 100% don't want to be the story. That's their whole goal, by the way. Well, Miami-Ohio State game, right? Like, there was two penalties the entire game. There wasn't a penalty called until the fourth quarter. And I talked to my buddy who's, he's working his way through the college ranks and becoming a ref right now. And he's like, perfect game. They did great. Weren't the story. Like, all the calls were great, but, like, they did a good job there. That's
wait, what a referee stayed with referees, didn't go against it. I've never heard.
Nobody said like that's the goal though. The goal is that you don't want to become the game. If they throw that penalty in that moment, guess what? It's the ref show. The refs become a big part of that game. Now, oddly enough, they become a big part of the game anyway.
Can I tell you what I think is an interesting an interesting tributary of this to me? I think if that's a regular season game, I think it's called. It was so blatant. I mean, it was so.
I still don't think it does.
It was so in the regular season.
I really don't.
I think in the playoffs, there's no way you can call that in the playoffs.
We've just seen so many Hail Marys where it doesn't happen.
Just about Hail Marys. I see end of regular season games dictated.
It wasn't a jump ball, which doesn't go in their favor. You know what I mean?
That's actually a really good point. I think the Ole Miss receiver probably should have been a little bit more physical trying to go back.
Well,
is that what you're talking about?
Well, more the idea that if it's a jump ball, it feels like everyone gets assaulted in those moments. You know, like, it's like it feels like it's just true. Like, everyone just gets to go after it. I don't know. I like that Golding had the right understanding though of if you wanted to beat Miami, they scored a touchdown in their last two drives. Miami did.
I think
like you had plenty of opportunities to stop them.
I think
fell short on me if he went off there.
I think him answering that the way he does plays really well with the media. I don't think it does you any favors back
home.
Well,
here's the thing.
You're a new head coach. You need to go off on this. You need to throw a temper tantrum.
Wanted you to be like the guys that were breaking their televisions last night arguing about it.
Well, not just that. Boosters want you to be that guy.
For sure they do.
And Pete Golding.
You get in no trouble. And I think because he, I mean, this is a big spot for him, right? And I do wonder if he wanted to. I mean, you go after the NCAA, you go after the refs in that moment. I wonder if he was a little cautious because of that. Like, if he had been a coach for 20 years, is that a different story?
No, I think he was. I think he was trying to look like the adult in the room with it. And it's tough to say that that is ever the wrong approach. But, man, you got to know about the people back home. Because I'll tell you, when they have their, because they will, like, this is the best that Ole Miss has done in a hot minute. The Ole Miss fans are going to think for a long time, we should have been in the national championship. We could have beat Indiana or Oregon. That was ours to win. He can play that up. That guy can survive for 5 to 7 years just on the, hey, we should have been in the national championship game and get people to rally around him for 5 to 7 years. I think he looks classy on the national level. And again, I don't know he's taking heat from Ole Miss fans, but I can tell you, this is pander a little bit. Yeah, college football is still very much a regional sport outside of the playoffs. That's where you got to listen. About 1 month a year, you got to win nationally, right? Maybe 2 months out of the year, you got to win nationally. The other 10 months, you got to win locally.
I just think it was such a weird thing because they have been kind of like how in the NFL, there's a couple teams that have just had, like the Bears are one of these teams where they've just, it seems like they've had like 5 games all decided at the very end of the game. And this Ole Miss team, I mean, the Oklahoma game, the LSU game, the Arkansas game, I can think of 3 games off the top of my head where it was like it came down to the wire. It came down to one of these last minutes, last play drives that really decided it. If you're an Ole Miss fan, you probably think to yourself, even though you got the ball with 18 seconds left and there wasn't a person that was objectively watching it like myself that thought they were going to even come close to driving down the field, They had to have thought that they had that in the taking, just because it's been the season that Ole Miss has had.
Yeah, and this is, I will say, this is such a win for college football.
It was an exciting game. Well, so, and that fourth quarter was absolutely electric.
It was a great game. And the refs, okay, you can say the refs dictated that game by not making a call, but that's better than the refs dictated the game by making a call narrative that is going to be out there. And everyone's talking about this today. Like, we did not talk a lot of Ole Miss Miami going into that, because that's not the game that's interesting to me in the playoffs right now. The remaining games, I think Indiana-Oregon is the national championship game, and you took a great game and somehow made it more sports radio friendly, more sports media friendly with an end of game call, no call. Like, this is what you need the playoffs to be. And what's been interesting is we haven't had as many blowouts in this year's playoffs. That is a really, really good thing for the expanded college football playoffs.
But I think this call is getting so much attention because the fourth quarter leading up to it was so awesome.
Yeah, like, you know, if it had been a dud, I don't think enough people have been watching to make it a thing.
It was Miami That's touchdown, good. Then it was matched by Ole Miss's touchdown, then matched by Miami's touchdown after that. Like, it was haymaker after haymaker after haymaker, and that's ultimately what we want to see. I mean, people were buzzing last night, and I was, there aren't many games where I'm sitting there on the edge of my seat and I actually like monitor and I'm like, I'm on the edge of my seat right now. I was on the edge of my seat last night watching that game.
I think these playoffs have been really good for college football. I think as much as, again, Ohio State fans are going to be pissed that they are on the outside looking in and they're not in the Final Four, right? As much as Alabama fans and SEC fans furious that they're not in, the fact that this is going to be a Big Ten team versus an ACC team, and against a team that people debated whether they should be in the playoffs, the fact that we're having another deep-seated
people
team.
People left them for dead midway through the
rightfully
season.
Rightfully so.
They lost to Louisville?
In previous years of football, this is not one of the eight teams, the four teams, whatever. Them winning is a good thing. Like, it's tough for people to understand, but Ole Miss being in this and having a legitimate gripe, Ole Miss is going to claim this until they either win a national championship or get back to this moment again.
They can't claim this.
No, they're going to claim.
No, Ole Miss, I tell you right, you can't claim
their
this.
Right to win this game for so long.
You can't claim this. You've got the ball back with 18 seconds left. You can't claim this.
Yeah, but they will.
I might have a little bit more sympathy if it was like they got the ball back with 3 minutes and they gave themselves enough time, and then on the 35-yard line they just kind of fell short, and then they got one chance. Maybe you got the ball back with 18 seconds left. You let Carson Beck run in the end zone untouched.
You're saying this.
He could have ran for 12 million miles.
You are correct. You are saying this logically, though. The beauty of college football fandom is it is way more insane than NFL fandom. And for now multiple teams to be able to say, I should have been in the semifinals, or I should be in the college football finals. Guys, the more teams, more fans that believe that they have a chance to win a national championship every year, the better that is for college football, even if it comes at the expense of Ohio State, even if it comes at the expense of Alabama and Texas and schools like that. This is a really good development that game was as good as it was. Now Miami's just got to make it close in the national title game.
My takeaway on this, and it dawned on me when I heard Cristobal talking afterwards, because he was mentioning how much better this team had gotten throughout the year. In a 3-week span, they lost to Louisville and SMU, and everyone had just thought this Miami team was just blouses. But Carson Beck
looked benchable.
I mean, it was
in
awful.
Those spots.
Absolutely
yeah.
awful. And everyone thought that Ruiz had wasted all this money, and what are we really doing? And the cool thing about this is that it kind of shows, and this happens a lot in sports, we don't give enough attention to it, is that you can get better as a team. Not only can you get better as a team, you can look drastically different with a team 3 months later than what you looked like in the beginning part of the season. And college football always penalized early season mistakes. And I love that this is a Miami redemption story where they're able to not only go out and win all these playoff games, but look very, very good in the process and a much different team than the ones that lost to Louisville and SMU.
How does the no call on defensive pass interference change your perception of the result of that game? Miami's legitimacy as a national champion. Jory Epstein joins us next. We'll talk about the quality of the Browns' job. Talk about the candidates we might want to see and Stefanski's impact on the quarterback position in Cleveland in 5 minutes on 92.3 The Fan. Heard about this? Have you seen about this? Have you heard about this? The Browns need a new head coach. Kevin Stefanski, If Harbaugh does go to Miami, which I don't know if that's more likely now after the Sullivan hire as GM, that would line up Kevin Stefanski to the Giants, the very least. So the coaching stuff from Cleveland is Dan Pitcher and Adden or Aiden Durty in Cleveland today for interviews, and they will be interviewing Chargers defensive coordinator Jesse Minter as well, coming up at some point in the very near future.
Oh, yeah, you see the Ravens have just posted they completed an interview with Kevin Stefanski for their head coaching position.
Well, I don't like that.
How about that?
I would prefer that he go to the Giants with Jackson Dart. Yeah.
I don't know, because I know what you think about Jackson Dart. I think that means you think he's going to fail in New York.
No, I just know he has a better chance of succeeding in Baltimore, and I don't need that.
I mean, Lamar obviously gives everyone a better chance than what Jackson Dart is. So there's like a clear, obvious, like, hey, good for you, Stefanski. But you're living up in Harbaugh's shadow. That's really tough shoes to fill. But clearly, it's a much better job than the Giants are. So, yeah, that's not great.
So to break down all this nonsense here, we're going to bring on the senior NFL reporter at Yahoo Sports, Jory Epstein, on the Make It Right, Call Kyle Wright hotline. Jory, happy Football Friday. Welcome to the show.
Happy Football Friday. Great to be on with you, Nick and Jonathan.
I feel like there's a million ways we can go here. I guess we'll actually start with the Harbaugh stuff, because I think Browns fans really deeply, badly want him here. I know this is a tough one because we don't know what the weekend's going to bring from the potential coaching openings. Where do you ultimately think is the best fit for Harbaugh, or where he ultimately lands?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think you nailed on the head what's so important is that one of the reasons it seems he's not interviewing more until next week is because you want to see what happens in the wild card round. I think there are multiple teams, whether it's the Packers or the Bills or the Steelers, who could look at this weekend's result and think twice about it. And with the Steelers, and you guys know that having just seen some of what went down with Harbaugh, it's not that I think the Steelers would fire Mike Tomlin if they lose, but I do think we're gearing up for Aaron Rodgers versus a much better pass rush than he saw last week. And Mike Tomlin might just be like, hey, I'm ready for a change. I'm ready for something new, the same way John Harbaugh and the Ravens were. So I think when you look at this, it's too early to have a great sense of it, which is crazy to say given that there are 8 teams open. But I do like the John Harbaugh to the Giants fit. I think that's exactly what the Giants need. I think he'd be in a big market. He'd be ready for it. There's talent on the roster. There's a quarterback likely answer. Obviously, it's still early in Jackson Dart's career. And I think most of all, if you're the Giants, you need an adult in the room who's going to tell Jackson Dart, hey, you can't be taking the hits you're taking and scrambling quite to the degree you are. And who better than to get him to listen to that than John Harbaugh?
So how out of it do you think the Browns are in the Harbaugh sweepstakes?
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
8 Jaguars, 4 weeks. Yamava Resort and Casino at San Manuel is giving away 2 Jaguars every Thursday starting January 8th. Club Serrano members, play to earn entries for your chance to win a new luxury crossover SUV. Join for free today and don't miss your chance to drive off in a Jaguar. More cars, more chances to win, only at Yamava Resort and Casino, celebrating its 40th anniversary. You in? Details at yamava.com. Must be 21 to enter. Please gamble responsibly.
I mean, I think the Harbaugh sweepstakes, that's a tough one, are actually kind of pending until next week, but it would surprise me if he went there. I just think he's going to have his pick of the draw, and I wouldn't consider Cleveland the most attractive opening, but I also would not consider it the least attractive, so you got that going for you.
Hey, all right.
What do you consider the least attractive, and why is it Tennessee?
Don't know Tennessee. So it's so funny because I think when you look at which openings coaches would most want to me, there's like 2 big questions and then plenty of little ones beyond it, which is the stability / ownership side and who you're going to be working with, if they're going to give you patience. For example, Las Vegas Raiders, 5 coaches, including interim since 2021. Like, you guys have had Kevin for 6 years. So in the time that Kevin's been there, and even shorter than that, the Raiders had 5 different guys serving as their head coach. So I think there's that element. And there's also, do you have an answer at quarterback? And if you don't, what's your path to it? So I actually have a piece coming out on Yahoo whenever my editor finishes editing it, which he's doing right now, about the biggest question marks at quarterback. And I put Cleveland as 3rd biggest question mark behind the Dolphins and the Cardinals, because I think both of those teams, they don't have the high draft picks. necessarily. I guess Arizona's got it, but I don't really know what they do with it. And you still have Kyler Murray on the roster. You've got Tua Tagovailoa, and you don't really like either of those options based off what you've just told them the last season. So I think those are both bigger question marks. If I just have no idea what direction those teams are going compared to Cleveland. You've got a defense. Like, you have some of the pieces. You just need to turn over the offense, as Andrew Berry and Jimmy Haslam talked about at length on Monday.
Did the Browns get it right firing Stefanski?
It's a good question. I think it's funny when I see these interviews with Tommy Rees and with Jim Schwartz, and I'm like, all right, well, if you decide to run it back with those two, I would have even more questions about Kevin Stefanski. But I think he's been there 6 years. The wins haven't come. I would say that's probably first and foremost because of quarterback decisions and quarterback circumstances out of his control. But at some point, whether or not it was his control, some of these factors, he's given up play calling twice. The offense hasn't worked. He's the offensive guy. It was time for something new. So I would say, yes, Cleveland got it right. But I would also say that this is the right move for Kevin Stefanski, even if it wasn't his decision, because I think he will have a better opportunity to have success in his next stop.
I mean, we just talked before you came in about the Ravens completing their interview with Stefanski for their head coaching position. Do you think that's reality? Is Stefanski really the belle of the ball, so to speak, in this cycle to be able to pull that off?
Yeah, it's funny because when John Harbaugh and the Ravens divorced, they each became the most attractive candidate and team respectively. And so I would say if you're Kevin Stefanski and you're the most attractive candidate right now behind John Harbaugh, you should have a real chance. I also think that the Ravens might want something a little different. Whether we like it or not, PR tends to matter in these hirings. And I think selling the division guy who wasn't winning in the division, even if he didn't have a quarterback, is probably a hard sell. I could see them more doing like a Jesse Minter, the defensive coordinator from the Chargers, or a name like that. But I also think that the Ravens are not going to conclude the search before we see what jobs open next week, if any, given that they have far and away the most attractive opening and quarterback situation.
Jory, one of the reasons we wanted to have you on was that you talked about the impact of Stefanski's firing on the quarterback position and Shedeur Sanders. Do you think the firing of Stefanski is a good thing or a bad thing for Shedeur?
Yeah, again, I think it's hard to know for sure and have answers on this until you know who's replacing him. If you said, hey, do you think Stefanski, or let's say it's John Harbaugh again, I don't think it will be, Stefanski or John Harbaugh, who's better for sure, that would be a different question to answer than Stefanski versus this big question mark. I think that there is plenty of NFL history where coaches want the quarterback they picked, especially if that's not a first overall caliber pick. Like, we're seeing like the three first-year head coaches in the playoffs right now. It's Trevor Lawrence, Caleb Williams, and Drake Maier, their quarterbacks. Well, those were first, and third overall, not just round, but overall picks. So I've talked to people in the league who question whether the next coach will view Shedeur as QB1 material. And I've talked to others who say, hey, if it's year two, he's got a little experience under his belt. He's got an offense and offseason more tailored to him. That could make a world of difference. So I think that in some ways he has to prove it again, but I'm also not sure that the last staff was sure he was the answer forever, even if he was the answer through the season. So I don't think it's a huge step back.
Yeah, it's interesting in thinking about Shedeur that way, because like, there's so many different options the Browns could go. If they start 2026 with Shedeur, what do you think that does for not only 2026, but then also then 2027 and beyond?
Yeah, I mean, to me, the question is, would they do that? I would be surprised if they don't draft a quarterback this year, because Andrew Berry philosophically believes you should draft a quarterback, if not every year, most years, because you're often going to miss. It's such an important dart, so you got to keep throwing them. And I had a conversation with him on the record about that when I was in Cleveland for minicamp this past year. And so then if you say, well, the Browns have the 6th overall pick and the 31st or late round pick, I guess we have to see, then what are they going to do with that? And so to me, if they like a quarterback, you got to take the first rounder, even if you don't want them to start immediately over Shedeur. Now, obviously, most quarterbacks are better in their second year. You do have the counterpoint to that, which is that you have sophomore slumps because people have figured it out. They have tape on you, all of that. I also want to know who's on the offensive line, because I think all of the weapons matter. But what I can tell you is I do expect that Cleveland will be intellectually honest about the games that Shedeur started that he won and the games that he lost. What was his role in each of those? So if there were games he lost, but maybe he had a strong game and offensive line let him down or the kicker let you down, I think you're honest about that. And I think if there's a game, which I would argue the last game of the season, it wasn't his best game this year, but they won. And so what were the reasons he won? And I think parsing through the actual data as opposed to just the end, even if winning is the most important stat, is what you want to do in this situation.
Jory Epstein, Yahoo Sports, senior NFL reporter on the Make It Right, Call Kyle Wright hotline. Joining us, we're talking obviously the head coach spot here in Cleveland. The latest news is that the Ravens have announced they have completed an interview with former Browns head coach Kevin Stefanski, so we've talked about that. Mike McDaniel gets fired, kind of surprising given the timing of it. Maybe not surprising given the way the last 2 years have gone in Miami. I was surprised that my partner and I were a little bit more on the side of, I don't think this would be the worst thing to do given his offensive acumen. If you can keep Jim Schwartz, how do you view Mike McDaniel as a head coach candidate in this cycle?
Yeah, I love what you said, because to me, if you get Mike McDaniel as your head coach with Jim Schwartz as the defensive coordinator, that's an awesome mix. I think that when I look at these coaches, and Kevin O'Connell and Brian Flores had this year in Minnesota, among others, if one guy's pretty even keeled, I want another fiery guy at the top, or vice versa. I think you should have different personalities because you're coaching players who are going to have different ways that reach them. So I actually really like the idea of Mike McDaniel with Jim Schwartz, because I think their personalities would complement each other. Their levels of intensity, or outward intensity, I should say, would complement each other. And I do think Mike McDaniel is one of the better offensive minds. So I'd be interested which quarterback. I also am not sure that he is the best fit for Baltimore. If you want to talk about, well, Baltimore's more attractive opening, because I think that some of the elements of the Shanahan and McVay system would probably neutralize Lamar's superpowers in a way that just wouldn't make sense for Lamar. Now, obviously Lamar would be great, whatever he did, but you don't want to have something that's so predicated on the timing rhythm of the pass that takes away some of that out of structure. So I like the idea of Mike McDaniel with Jim Schwartz a lot.
All right, well, if you're McDaniel, do you sign up for being a head coach here, or would you rather be the OC for the Lions, let's say?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to turn down the amount of talent that the Lions have on offense right now. It's a good question, and I also think that it's not only OC versus head coach, but like, some people want a year, but taking a step back. I mean, even look at what Mike Vrabel did when he came to Cleveland last year. Like, some people like that. They like that reset. They get their bearings, they move forward. So I wouldn't be surprised if Mike McDaniel loved the idea of going to Detroit. And I think that the cast of characters they have on offense there is definitely more ready for him to succeed from a scheme standpoint. And then maybe he gets back out there. So you're right. I think I would take the Detroit job unless he just feels really set on being a head coach again immediately.
Oh, no, it's not a you're right. We weren't trying to drive that conclusion there. Yeah. We were it just kind of happened.
Yeah, Jonathan.
Yeah.
Jonathan likes the Lions OC job more than that. All right, let's get to the actual football we got going this weekend. Six games here. I think this could be a really great game for the bigger seeds. That was very sloppy. Meaning the deeper seeded teams, the 5, 6, and 7 teams. How do you see this this weekend lining up? Wild card weekend in the NFL.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, starting off 5 seed. First game of the weekend, you've got the Rams going to the Panthers. I don't think we can count the Panthers out altogether, because they did beat the Rams during the regular season, so we know it's possible. But the Rams are a more talented team. They have one of the MVP favorites in Matthew Stafford. We'll see, obviously, Super Bowl week if he wins it. And I just think they're such a well-coached team. They're further along in their development than the Panthers. The Panthers exceeded expectations, but they have that. A lot of people are picking the Packers over the Bears. I picked the Bears. I still think that what Ben Johnson can do with Caleb Williams will make that offense dangerous enough, even if the Bears defense can't keep up. So we'll see whether I'm right about that. And I think similarly, if you look at the 49ers and Eagles, there are people who think the 49ers over the Eagles, but I look at it and I say the 49ers defense is so shorthanded. And while the 49ers are a team that have overperformed relative to the health of their roster, and the Eagles have underperformed relative to expectation, I still think that when it comes down to it, a game in Philly, the 49ers don't have the pass rush without Nick Bosa, without Fred Warner healthy, that is actually going to impact Jalen Hurts in their offense. So I think if the Eagles lose, it'll be because of them more than the 49ers. And Vic Fangio, he can handle the 49ers.
Jory, what I'm fascinated by is this Bills game. I think the ramifications from it could be immense. Vegas has been all over, and the lines have been moving like crazy. It seems like the sharp bettors love Jacksonville. The squares like the Bills. How do you see this?
Yeah, it's a great question, because it's kind of like we have so little of the old guard, and it feels funny to call the Patrick Mahomes, Lamar Jackson, Josh Allen the old guard of the AFC. But the recent ones who have been perennial contenders in the playoffs, it kind of feels like Josh Allen's that one representing that group. So he's kind of old guard, and the Jaguars turning around Trevor Lawrence having the defense as new guard, I still tend to think that even if I believe the Jaguars are a better team, and I do, I mean, look at what they did against Denver and look at what they did most of the season. I tend to think that in the regular season, you might have the most talented team win, but in the playoff experience and having been there before takes you another layer. And I also think it takes you to the quarterback position and what Josh Allen has done. So I have trouble doubting Josh Allen this year the way I had trouble doubting Patrick Mahomes last year. So I'm going with the Bills, but that'll be a great game.
Jory, this was a great interview. Great stuff with you. Still a little pissed about the Lions thing, but that's okay because this was a great interview. Great stuff, and enjoy the incredible weekend of football.
Nick, Jonathan, great to talk to you both.
Jory Epstein there on the Make It Right Call Kyle Wright hotline. Words are hard today for me. We're getting through it. We'll react to what Jory had to say and the playoff eliminator in 5 minutes on 92.3 The Fan.
Oh, I don't really know.
A little bit of a troll on the 92.3 The Fan YouTube channel, but you know what? Somebody's got to do it.
Who isn't these days on the internet?
Exactly. Miles Simmons joining us in about 20 minutes here. We'll get to the Kevin Stefanski news with him. I think probably the first question in that Baltimore interview has to be, so it took you 3 years to build an offense around Deshaun Watson. Would it take you 3 years to build one around Lamar Jackson?
I actually wonder if instead of a question, they just gave him a hug. and said, hey, listen, we know.
They committed an HR violation?
No, it seems like, I don't think it's an HR violation to hug a coworker, but maybe it is.
Okay.
But maybe it is.
All right.
An uninvited hug, definitely.
Okay, how are you going to get hug consent?
We work in sports talk radio. What do you mean, how are you going to get hug consent?
Hey, you want a hug?
Hey,
you do that, you're going to get your ass beat around
here.
You
seem like you had a tough time. We're going to hug this one out?
And then Stefanski's going to respond.
Turn me to Zion
Williamson
here with
the... Did you bring me to Baltimore just to get a hug?
I think they're like, always going to be like, did you bring me to Baltimore just to console me from what happened? And they'll be like, yeah, maybe.
I didn't turn you into Zion Williamson with the hug machine.
I didn't say you turned me into it.
You turned you into Zion Williamson.
No. Not in the slightest bit. Not in the slightest bit.
You're like the least huggy person I've ever met.
I don't think you've ever seen me give a hug.
Yes, precisely.
I don't know that you ever will see me give a hug.
I think you and I have hugged once, and it was when I left for Charlotte.
And that might have even just been a dap that maybe turned into like a quasi-hug.
Yeah,
and then afterwards, I was probably like, that one got close.
But let it be known, it was ass out.
It had to be.
Yeah.
You think I'm giving any other type of hug at this point?
Same here.
I'm not a hugger.
Yeah, because I'm a real man.
Not a hugger.
Miles Simmons coming up in about 15 minutes here. But we're going to welcome in, I was going to say the commissioner. It's a commissioner of a different thing. We're going to welcome in Jake Murren here to run our playoff eliminator for the wild card round. So the goal here is similar to our divisional picks heading into the NFL season, which was disastrous for all three of us. It's different now. We've watched 18 weeks of football. We totally know what we're going to do on this one. Jake's going to go ahead and tabulate all of our many picks for this weekend.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
One briefcase, one moment could change everything. Yamava Resort and Casino at San Manuel is giving you a chance to own your destiny in 2026. Play throughout the month of January, and on January 28th, one Club Serrano member will win the case, and with it, a finale spot in any 2026 promotion, plus $400,000. Which destiny will you choose? It's all happening at Yamava Resort and Casino, celebrating its 40th anniversary. You in? Details at yamava.com. Must be 21 to enter. Please gamble responsibly.
And then next week, we will declare who got the most right.
Yeah, so we can actually start with the first game of Wildcard Weekend. That's tomorrow with the Panthers facing off against the Rams. As Jory pointed out last segment, the Panthers did get the best of the Rams in the regular season, but what do you guys think? And I'll actually start with you, Nick, on this prediction.
I don't think there's a chance in hell the Panthers can beat the Rams. The Rams, I know they've had a couple boo-boos down the stretch. The Rams are a team that I think should be the Super Bowl representative for the NFC this year. They have just about everything you need. The Panthers are lucky to be in the playoffs. And listen, I root for the Panthers because I work down in Charlotte. Bryce Young isn't that good. That defense isn't that good. McMillan kid's really good. Like, this is...
Yeah.
They run the ball pretty well, but, like, by and large, this Panthers team is not good. It wouldn't surprise me if this was much closer to a blowout.
You don't have to do much research for this one. Yes, they did lose the Rams earlier. The Panthers beat the Rams earlier in the year, so I get that's going to be hanging over everyone's head. But
my Charlotte people are really leaning on that one, by the way.
They have to after they lost the final two to limp into the postseason as is. They're hardly got it. They don't have encouragement from many places. That was the worst Matthew Stafford game all year, though.
Mm-hmm.
He had two interceptions in a matter of three pass attempts, and it was... you just watching it unfold was like, oh no, Stafford's melting down.
But it wasn't anything the Panthers defense did.
No, well, one went off the Rams receiver's hands, and the other one was just a really bad throw by Stafford.
Now, that being said, Derek Brown, this could be a game that he does really well. I don't love the interior defensive lineman for the Rams. They grade out okay, but like Derek Brown should feast in that. That could be something that makes this game a little interesting.
And the Rams special teams stink.
Yeah.
And they not talked about enough.
Also their special teams coordinator.
They've lost three games this year because of special teams. And so maybe they got something to hang on to. But yeah, this game doesn't need much.
All right, Mac, you going to make it 3-for-3 with the Rams?
Yeah, make it 3-for-3. I can't bet against Matthew Stafford, especially going against Carolina.
All right, we go to the next game there, Jake.
Yeah, we have the Bears taking on the Packers in an NFC North showdown. Obviously, very entertaining matchups between these two teams in the regular season. But now we face off in the wild card for the Bears and Packers. We go to you, JP, first for this one.
I think the Bears are going to get this one. Matt LaFleur is, as a 7 seed, just knows how to get bounced in the first round. This is kind of what he does. This is what he's known for at this point. Bears were ascending going into the playoffs. The Packers were descending going into the playoffs. I think that momentum continues. I think the Bears get this one.
Mac?
I'm going to go ahead and go with the Bears as well. Too many injuries for Green Bay down the stretch. And, again, Chicago playing really well at the end of the season.
The Bears defense relies way too much on turnovers. Now you're playing Jordan Love, who can throw a turnover or two, especially in the playoffs. I think the Bears are a fluky 2 seed. I think the Packers have more playoff experience. I think Jordan Love is more ready for this moment. I think Caleb Williams down the stretch got really lucky that he didn't self-combust because he had moments to win games that he just kind of skitzed on. I'm actually taking the Packers, even though I have a rooting interest in Chicago.
All right, that's our first ascension of the wild card prediction so far. Next up, the last NFC matchup here. We have the Eagles taking on the 49ers. The Eagles, the home team in this matchup. We'll go to Mac first for a prediction.
I'm going
to
go ahead and pick the 49ers. I think that they're going to get it together on offense, and also a little bit of a hot take. I think that this is going to be the last game that Nick Sirianni coaches for the Eagles.
Don't hate that. But I do hate the pick. It's going to be Philadelphia. San Francisco is a bit of a mirage. They had a really good season considering all the injuries to their defense. That defense cannot hang with this Philly offense, which is funny to say considering so many of the narratives on the Philly offense most of the season. I expect Philly to win out here. The only way I can see it is if Brock Purdy just goes thermonuclear, and I don't see that one happening.
Yeah, definitely not happening. In fact, the line right now for Brock Purdy on touchdown passes is 1.5. Eagles don't give up a lot of touchdown passes in general, and so I think the Vegas is kind of banking on that. Too many injuries to the 49ers. They're a very fraudulent football team. I think the clock is striking midnight. They're going to turn into a pumpkin, and we're going to see that on full display.
All right, what up?
All right, on to the AFC wildcard games. Let's start with the Patriots, who welcome the Chargers into New England. We'll go to you, Nick, first.
I think this is one of the hardest games to decide. I think this is right up there with Packers-Bears, and you could spin this a million different ways. I love Jim Harbaugh in the playoffs. I think Justin Herbert, this could be his chance to vindicate, but Mike Vrabel is also a coach that I really trust in the playoffs. And listen, I think the Patriots are healthier. I think in the end, if the Chargers were just a little healthier, I think I would take the Chargers. They are not, especially on the offensive line. I think it could be a tough day for Justin Herbert with some of the pressure he faces. Give me the Pats.
Listen, there's so much of me that doesn't want to take the Patriots. They've had a cupcake schedule. They've had a lot. It's Drake May in his first ever playoff appearance. There's so many things that just kind of go against what I think New England will do in this game. But I can't take the Chargers. They have no left tackle or right tackle. Herbert's dealing with a fractured hand now on top of the injuries he had previously. And I just don't think there's going to be enough for him. And on top of that, by the way, we're speaking about Herbert, who's supposed to be the everything for this team, and he is. Last year in the playoffs, Herbert looked like he'd never played a game in his life. He threw more interceptions in the playoff game last year than he had in the entire regular season. So I got to take the Patriots here, but I do so begrudgingly.
Actually, I actually have to flip my pick. There wasn't something you said. The Chargers defense is for real. That is a really good defense. I think the quarterback, they kind of check each other off. I think the head coach advantage checks each other off. There's one elite defense in it. There's one clear, better defense in it, and it is the Chargers. I will take the Chargers. That's tough. See, I told you, it was one of the toughest games to pick, and I flip-flopped already.
New England is top five in defensive points allowed per drive, but that's fine. It's neither here nor there.
Give me New England. I think that they're the most well-balanced team in the playoffs right now, and on top of it, too, obviously Mike Vrabel, I think, gets everybody prepared very well, so give me New England.
All right, another tricky matchup here in the AFC wildcard weekend games. We have the Jaguars playing host to the reigning league MVP, Josh Allen, and the Buffalo Bills. I want to go to you, JP, first on this one, because you've been, I guess, a Jaguars supporter this season, or at least you thought they would win their division, and they did.
Oh, no,
you
no. Think they, a lot of they people just called one. Him a big Jag. There's a difference.
Where's the drop, Mac?
Womp, womp.
There we go.
It was funnier than a womp, womp. All right, anyway, you're right to call me out in this first, though, because I'm going to remain the big Jag. Everybody thinks that I am. We're going to go with Jacksonville here. We have to. Sean McDermott never won a road playoff game. He's 0-5 in his career with that. Josh Allen has played in 4 road playoff games. He's 0-4 in those 4 games. They don't play well on the road in these playoffs, and I just think Jacksonville's a better team at this spot. I think there's so much pressure on McDermott and Allen. Allen has got to feel like this is his postseason to knock everybody off and finally be able to get through, and I just think it's going to crumble. I take Jacksonville, and I'm shocked that Vegas has this one as close as they do.
The Buffalo Bills will be winning this game because Josh Allen is the best player in this game on either side of the ball. Jacksonville is a little bit fraudulent. They're not a lot fraudulent, but they're a little bit fraudulent. And even with the Bills' run defense being what it is, I'm going to take the Bills.
I'm going to also take the Bills. It's a pick that I'm least confident in, but give me the 24th pick.
Well, now I'm even more confident about it. Now that Mac is not confident in it, I am so confident in
it. Vegas has this one down to 1.5 now.
Final one.
Yeah, the Monday night football game between the Steelers and the Texans, the Pittsburgh Steelers hosting a playoff game. Do they finally get a win in the playoffs, or does that streak continue for Pittsburgh?
Pittsburgh Nick. Wins.
Texans win. It didn't even matter if they're playing the Texans. They could have been playing Bugs Bunny and 10 other guys. Doesn't matter. The Steelers
still just pissed about
they don't,
that
they
burger
don't win
bag.
Playoff games. They don't win playoff games. And
this will be the year.
Tomlin's going to lose this game, and then we'll talk afterwards about if he's going to TV.
We're
going to
get at least one moment of vintage Aaron Rodgers in this playoff game, so that he can save some of his late career arc here, and they're going to win. It's going to be close. It's going to be a really fun game. It's going to be more of like an AFC North style game. But Aaron Rodgers is going to do one thing, and they're going to go to the second round of the playoffs.
Texans have the best defense in the playoffs right now. Give me the Texans.
I just thought of a juicy thing. If they make it to the Super Bowl, the Steelers, that is, Aaron Rodgers, the fake wife has to come out at some point, right? You can't
fake?
Hide her for the whole Super Bowl.
No.
How do you hide her through the whole Super Bowl? You can't do that.
Yeah, that's going to be the confirmation that she is, in fact, fake.
Oh, also, give me the Nick Chubb touchdown in Pittsburgh. Redemption.
Okay. That's fanboy.
You know, he led the Texans in rushing touchdowns this year.
It wasn't hard to do that.
He had 3. They had 9 as a team.
Well, he'll make it 4.
Miles Simmons, Pro Football Talk. He's going to talk about who his guy is for the Browns head coaching job, Kevin Stefanski in Baltimore, and all that nonsense in 5 minutes on 92.3 The Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.